Hi everyone and welcome to Clocking In. My name's Lathan MB and today I'll be talking to John Gorstang from the Positive Pet Project. Hi John, how are you doing?
Hello there, great to see you and great to speak to you again. It's been a while.
It has been a while. So let me know, what have you been up to since we last spoke?
Goodness me. Well, I've been a busy chap. I've been, as you know, I live on the Greek island of Rhodes, and I specialize in animal welfare, animal rehabilitation, and dog training here. And of course, on the Greek islands, there's never a short of interesting cases and work to do. So I've been working with a few different rescue dogs, rehabilitating them. I've started a community group where people who are a bit shy or nervous around the island could join me. And I've been developing and finishing a 2-year project, which is a comprehensive course for people that want to learn more about their dogs. And developing an app. Other than that, just looking after my little boy. And more recently, and don't get jealous, I've been swimming in the sea every day.
Don't.
I know.
I'm really missing the sunshine at the moment, because here in the UK, it has been freezing. It's been non-stop rain.
Yeah. I mean, I did my 35-year sentence in England. And even though, you know, I don't regret it, and I love England for many, many reasons, especially the people and the pubs and the nightlife and the banter. You know, I miss the banter.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, I felt it was time to trade those things in for a more simple life for my son, and just a new challenge. You know, because you can rest on your laurels, and you know, I'd like to keep moving forward and challenging myself.
Yeah, of course. So let's just go back to the beginning. What was the final decision to make you head over to Greece and set up the Positive Pet Project?
Very good.
I said that all in one without any...
Nailed it, mate. You nailed it. All those hours in front of the mirror. I mean, look, I had a successful dog business in Southwest London for many years. And I really enjoyed it, but it wasn't very challenging for me. And I felt myself drifting a little bit, and I had a bit of a kind of existential crisis of where can I go from here, and what can I do to challenge myself? And about 12 years ago, when I first made the decision to work in animal welfare, I was given the opportunity to run an animal shelter in Zambia, in Southern Africa. And that was a game changer for me, because it made me realize that I love the community aspect of working with dogs. And I love the things that they can do to help people in bad situations. And just to kind of be a bridge between, you know, the knowledge that we've gained in the past 50 years in the West, and bringing that to people that don't necessarily know the stuff, but they've got the heart, they've got the will, and they're hungry to learn. So, you know, I just felt like that was my calling. No 2 days are the same. No 2 dogs are the same. No 2 relationships are the same.
Yeah, sure.
And Greece obviously is closer. It was less of a jump for my family to come to Greece than it was to have moved to Southern Africa.
Yeah.
I was very, very close. and I had a cousin here who's a windsurf instructor, and he kind of introduced me to a few people and got me started. And it just felt like the right time. You know, sometimes, you know, if you spend too long thinking about a question or an idea, you never make the decision. And then you realize it's five years down the line and you're still there thinking about it. So I just kind of, you know, without wanting to cliche too much, I just kind of backed myself and thought, you know what, I can do this. And even though I moved here with no job, nowhere to live, and I left everything behind, it was exhilarating, and it paid off in the end.
So out of all the world, then, I mean, obviously you've got Spain, the Balearics, Africa, as you said, why particularly Greece?
Well, Greece is like, it's not in many ways it's one country, but in many ways it's quite disparate. Like, you know, if you look at Corfu, compare it to Thessaloniki in North Greece, compare it to Rhodes, compare it to Crete. They're very different places culturally because of, you know, the history.
Yeah.
And the really interesting thing about roads, like if you look out my window, you can see the snow-capped mountains
Oh,
of Turkey. So
I'm so jealous.
you can be swimming in even now in like 27 degrees in the with no clouds, and then you're looking in the water across the Aegean Sea, and you can see the snow-capped mountains of Turkey. So it's that close, you know, and Rhodes has really got it's got one foot in the old world in many ways and one foot in the new world. So it crosses that boundary, and that makes it interesting from my perspective, because even though they've got the same cars as us, the same clothes, the same brands and all that, and listen to the same music or whatever, they still, in many ways, when it comes to like old-fashioned family values, which are charming in many ways, but when it comes to things like animal welfare, they're just not with it. They're really not. And it's just a matter of just giving them a little bit of gentle guidance to say, look, you don't need to chain your dog up. You don't need to punish an animal to train it. You don't need to be dominant all the time. You know, there are other ways, much kinder ways, and much more effective ways. And that's really one of the advantages of moving here, because it's got a place in both worlds.
Yeah, I also find myself, obviously I've traveled quite a lot, and I find that, you know, in a lot of countries, they're not up on the animal welfare, you know. That's what I found personally, and I've traveled a lot, and I'm not judgmental in any way, but it's very, very true, you know. They'll have a dog for 5 minutes, then they chuck it to the curb.
Yeah, I mean, it's no country, all countries have got its good and bad,
Yeah, obviously.
and at the moment now, I'm really lucky, because I wrote a book a couple of years ago, which has been taken into the Greek school system. So it's in the book, and my education programs in the Greek national curriculum. Actually, Thursday morning, they've got a National Animal Day, and I'm going to be going into schools showing some of the ideas for my book, and I'm going to take my training dog in with me. You might, if you've shown some pictures of my gallery or my Instagram, you'll see pictures
I
of me.
definitely will.
Yeah, there's some pictures of me with my Luna, my amazing rescue dog who goes into schools with me. And we talk about body language, we talk about energy, about breathing and being calm and kind, and you know, respecting the animal and allowing building the symbiosis, building the connection with the animal. And you know, for kids who have never been taught that by their grandparents or parents, you know, it's easy to teach that to a kid, because they haven't got those barriers, they haven't got those preconceptions. So you know, it's a real joy to try and see if I can make a little dent in the next generation of people coming through, and hopefully make an impact for the future.
Absolutely, an education in any aspect is a bonus to everybody, especially the young generation who are so eager to learn, and you can learn them the right way, can't you?
That's exactly right, mate. I mean, do you know what? No one wants some, you know, stuck up or cocky bloke coming over to a country saying, you should do things this way. You know, it's just, I mean, even just thinking about it makes my skin crawl. But what I do try and do is I try and identify where there is a passion for it, where there is a lust for it, where there is an energy for a change. And then, okay, say if there's a group of volunteers over there and they want to make a change, but they don't know how, I can say, look, I can give you some tools that you might not have already. And that's kind of what I've done here. Because otherwise you can push and you get pushed back. And in many countries I've worked in, people have been really open to my teaching, but in Greece, not so much, you know.
Why do you think that is? Do you speak Greek?
No, I don't. My Greek is really bad, but my son is fluent. My son is
Right.
completely fluent in three languages, actually.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, he's but so but the so it, with, from my perspective, it's trying to turn a negative into a positive. So I say, well, yeah, I don't speak Greek, but okay, number one, every school's got an English teacher. So number two, when you're communicating with a dog, you're not communicating through language. You know, when people say my dog won't understand the language, you know, they're missing the point, because it's about the cues, about the body language and the tone. It's not about the words. You know, if you get to a high level, people think that, you know, you should teach your dog commands and then you teach them other stuff afterwards. It's the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, you can teach a dog so much about where it stands with you just by the way you hold yourself, the way you conduct yourself, the way you breathe, and the way you interact with what they give you.
Yeah, that's really, yeah, very, very interesting.
So that's my excuse of being lazy and not learning Greek.
But I should imagine it's quite a difficult language to learn, is it?
Listen, it's a fascinating language, and they put little things together so you have a word that we steal a huge amount of Greek in especially in things like terminology about medical stuff like psychotherapy, anthropomorphism. These are all Greek words, and it's taking little words and like the word pandemonium. We say it's pandemonium. Pan is like Pan-Hellenic, and it's like it means all over, and demonium is like the releasing of demons. So it's like pandemonium means literally like the demons are released everywhere.
Wow.
So it's a great language if you're interested in the way that things are structured. But do you know what? Because I'm doing so much stuff here, I would have to take pretty much a part-time job to just to learn Greek. So
yeah.
I do bits and pieces, but it's not a big priority, which I know sounds really typically English and arrogant. But, you know, I can't do everything.
Yeah, exactly. So what's a typical day look like for you then? You know, obviously you get up in the morning. What's the first port of call? Well, without saying the obvious.
Well, do you know what? Like, I'm a big sun worshiper. Like, and you can probably tell from my complexion, my mum's Irish. So I've got that Irish, a lot of my DNA says no, don't be out in the sun too much. And
yeah.
You know, I don't go a nice shade of bronze. I don't look like a Greek god at all. more like a lobster than a.
I see.
But I do appreciate the huge benefits of sunlight on our brains, on our bodies.
Yeah, definitely. So
the most important thing I do straight away is drink a big glass of water, and I go on the terrace and I stretch. I try and really stretch to get the mind going, and after coffee, it's just a matter of getting down to my schedule. I take my son to school, and normally I'll have a couple of meetings in the day with clients, or sometimes I go to the shelter. Mm-hmm. I might accompany a couple or family that want to take a dog from the shelter, and they're nervous to go on their own because they don't know what to expect, and it's quite an intimidating place to go.
Yeah.
And a few trainings. I'm also a professional musician, as you know. So,
yes, I do know him.
I've got my first gig of the year tomorrow night, actually.
Fabulous.
So a bit of music, and take my son to his jobs. And at the moment, it's about preparing for the launch of my course and my app. So what I'm trying to do is the animal welfare world is quite strange, because if you try and do things, people get suspicious and think that you're doing them for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I've noticed over years of working in shelters is that people often just need a tiny bit of encouragement, like a tiny bit of just looking at things in a slightly different way. It doesn't have to be complex.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be life-changing, but just sometimes a little bit of information. So I tried to condense that down into a tiny, like maybe 5-6 videos. And I bought this app out, and I was wondering about, you know, how much I should sell it for and all this kind of stuff. And I thought, you know what? It's completely wrong. It's taken me maybe 4 or 5 hours of filming to do the app, which is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been put together by a guy because I trained his dog, so he's doing that for me for a favor.
Yeah.
So who am I to ask for money for that when there are thousands of people out there that really could benefit from a couple of little bits of information? And hopefully that will see me in good stead. So I've been thinking about ways of putting that across to people, just to say, like, just take it, watch it. If you don't like it, fine. You haven't lost anything. You've lost like maybe half an hour of your life.
Yeah. And is it a free app then that people download?
Yeah, it's going to be completely free. Yeah, it's going to be free. It's going to be 6 or 7 videos, instructional videos, but just talking about ideas. I'm going to have dogs in the video so I can show people practical things.
Yeah.
And if people like it and they think, I like that guy's style, I like his ideas, because it's a bit hippy dippy.
Yeah.
It's a bit kind of like, hey man, you know, get in with the dog. But I fundamentally believe from all the hours I've put in different parts of the world that this stuff really works, and it's it's about self-growth as well. You know, you know, when you fall out with a good friend or something, you often see the gaps in your own knowledge and where you've made a mistake. And that's growth, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
So how do you receive the dogs then? Do the dogs get donated to you, or do you find them on the side of the road, or what? I'm a bit confused myself, obviously, because I'd be the first to put my hands up and say I know nothing about dogs or pets because I've never had one myself. So how do the dogs come to you, or do the owners bring them to you and say, listen, my dog's a little bit naughty, can you teach it a little bit of discipline?
Well, I could write several books on things that I don't know about dancing and you know, the stuff that you're fantastic at. You know, we've all got different skills and different drives in life. So, you know, there's one of the great things about interacting and doing something like this great podcast is, you know, is you get to share ideas and talk to people with different ideas and disciplines.
Absolutely.
I think that's probably one of the greatest things about the internet. It's social media, is that we can share with people. Mm-hmm. So the problem with living in a little island like this and pretty much being the only person that does what I do. It started off, you know, with me going around and looking for things and trying to help. But very soon it just became, okay, that's the guy to call when someone, and it got ridiculous. It's like, my dog got a thorn in its foot, and let's call him. And I'm like, what are you doing? this is not my position. But the thing that I tried to create a niche for myself, so I didn't get vet questions. I didn't get questions from lazy people that just say, I don't like my dog anymore, can you help me get rid of it? You know, I was getting hundreds of people, but yeah, it became really awful. So, and because I'm such a mug, I would always say, yeah, I'll be over there in a minute. I created a rod for my own back for the first couple of years I was here. So in answer to your question, most of the rehab stuff comes from someone who's either found a dog by the road and they want to find it a new home, or they found it a new home and they just want a little bit of work done with it to make it a bit calmer and a bit less reactive to maybe kids or other dogs. So I can do that by bringing them to where I live, and I've got a big space and a lot of very nice dogs to work with. Mm-hmm. There are organizations. There's a famous young lady, Charlie, who's English, but she's half Greek. She's got this, if you go on the Ark Animal Sanctuary on Instagram, she made some quite popular videos about bringing an animal sanctuary over from England to Greece. Mm-hmm. And she called me a while ago about doing a dog training for her. So I flew to Athens, picked up the dog, flew it back, took it for 2 months, and then flew it to Berlin, where it now lives. Mm-hmm. So these are the rehabilitation works that I generally get through organizations. Yeah. There's a lot of organizations saving Greek animals. And then the behavioral stuff is generally just people saying, you know, my dog barks at me, my dog, you know, eats ice cream when it shouldn't or whatever. And they want me to give them some advice and give them some objectivity on that. But, you know, it's not my job really to tell people how to live their lives. It's my job to just point out what I see in the moment and then they can make a decision if they want to fix it or not.
Yeah. So how many dogs do you have at the moment then?
I've got my two old ladies from England who I brought over, mother and daughter. They're very old and decrepit, but they're my two oldest loves of my life. Aww. Winnie and Rhubarb. And then I've got Luna, who's the dog I rescued 3 years ago, who is my, she's the dog who I do my projects with, my school project. She's the one who I do all my training with. She's my boss dog. She's the one who I work with every day. She's an absolutely phenomenal animal. And at the moment I've got just little Karma, who's another rescue dog whose owner's sadly away with a sick family in Athens. So I'm just rehabilitating her. I had her by accident, but she spent a week at my house and she's already completely changed. She's become so much more confident and open, because sometimes when dogs display fear or whatever, anxiety, it's very difficult to understand whether we're feeding it and reinforcing it rather than trying to reinforce the bits of strength that we see. So I always try and teach people to look for those moments of strength and clarity and peace and to reinforce that.
Yeah, and also, do you think the dogs pick up on the human behaviour where they're 100%. Actually living?
No matter how good you are at reading dogs' body language, and I'm pretty decent at it, I can't compete with a dog when it comes to reading our body language. You can never compete with them because they're not working with verbal cues. You know, it's very, if you imagine someone who maybe can't see so well or whatever, they have to learn to up other parts of their senses. And I guess it's probably a little bit like that with a dog. They can certainly tell and read our next actions and reactions. And often the way that they behave when we look at them is based on something that they can anticipate us doing in the future. Yeah. In the next few minutes. And because they're reading us, we work in patterns, you know, they know when we're going to get up and go to the fridge, or we're going to get up and go to get our keys, to take them for a walk. They know what's going on as soon as it happens. Mm-hmm. And it's because they can read us. So it's our responsibility to check our self and the way we move and behave and breathe and stuff like that feel, so they can get good and better cues from us.
Now, I know my brother's been he's dying for me to ask this question for you. He's got a dog. I'm not sure what the name of the dog is. I think it's some kind of bulldog or something like that. But it constantly chases its tail round and round and round and round. Any ideas of what that could be so I can relay the information?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big problems is we had the pandemic.
Yeah.
The pandemic changed all of the patterns that we work in. Mm-hmm. And it made it very difficult for our dogs to get the stimulation that we need. So dogs are, they need stimulation. They need the two main types of stimulation. They need the mental stimulation, things to do, puzzles, or, you know, just interactions, sniffing things. And they need the physical stimulation. All dogs have got different levels. Some need more of one, some need more of the other, some need lots of both, some need little of both, whatever. So the chasing of the tail thing, it could be a lack of stimulation. It could be if the guy is reacting a certain way when the dog does it, it could be as a trigger to try and get some attention.
Yeah.
It could be because the dog is frustrated or bored. Mm-hmm. But also if the dog seems it's in distress, then it's always good to go and see a vet straight away. But, you know, just in case there's something that's triggering it, dogs can't say, look, I've got a pain behind my ear, or I've got this weird thing in my stomach. They can't do it. So when we try and guess what's wrong with them, they can't tell us. So that's the point when you take them to a vet. But I would say that if the dog is chasing his tail a lot, maybe try and think of ways to give him more stuff to do, like find some games to do, find some sniffer mats, find some chew toys, teach him how to hide things in the garden, make him wait, and then put things around the little puzzles for him to do.
Yeah.
There's lots of little stimulating things for him to do. And if you build in a structure where he's getting good quality walks, maybe if he's interacting with other dogs occasionally, if he's good with other dogs, then if a dog is good with other dogs, that's invaluable for just burning all that energy up. And I think you'll find that if he builds in the structure with mental, physical stimulation, then you'll probably find that the chasing of the tail will probably dissipate quite a lot.
Okay. Now, I do have some questions from my Instagram broadcast channel, which I'll ask in just a second. But I was going to ask you something and I completely forgot I was going to ask you.
Do you know what? It's what I always think, that's one of those things where the harder you look for it, the more difficult it is to find. So if you just crack on, I'm sure it'll come back to you.
I'm sure it will. Right, let's go to some questions from my broadcast channel, if you don't mind answering them. Now, I don't know what all of them are, and these questions are not from me. I just want to...
I'll do my best. That's all I can do.
Okay, this first one is from Kylie, and she wants to know, why do dogs always sleep with their butts towards you?
That's brilliant. Well, I don't
know. But they do, though. A lot of them do.
I think that's very true. Well, do you know what? Like, I don't know how many dogs Kylie slept with to see how many. They do. I don't know really. Like, I guess.
I think she means probably when she's sitting on the couch and then the dog's bar and it's nodding off and it always seems to show its butt in her face.
Okay. So, if people want to have dogs on their couch and their bed, that's absolutely fine. Of course, people can do whatever they want. But like, so often, like, if a dog is used to getting up, for example, and if it's used to getting up, so for example, my dog, if it comes up, I let my dog on the bed if there's a thunderstorm, because even though she's a tough, like Mike Tyson type dog, when there's a thunderstorm, she turns into a little baby. But if for example, she gets jealous, if I'm with my partner, or if I'm doing something and I'm not paying the attention that she wants, she'll often turn and face in the other direction as if to say, right, I'm offering you my backside. And also, I find with dogs sometimes, if they're bored, if you're in a place and they're on a leash, they'll often lie and face in the direction that they want to go. So they'll lie and face in the direction that they are. So I don't know. Maybe it's because they're and maybe anticipating the next play, which would be once the time on the bed is finished, they get off. Maybe they just like to blow off in your face and see the effect it has, because they like to see the effect it has on you when it happens. Because who doesn't go, oh my God? Yeah, but if you make a big fuss every time someone does something, think about, I mean, we're all the same, even us adults, if someone gets a laugh, then you're gonna keep doing it. And I can't speak specifically for a dog, but in my experience, I've not noticed they necessarily have their butt in your face, but I've noticed that dogs like to snuggle into you as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Okay, this next question is from Dog Mortician. Is it ha harder to train an elderly dog, an older dog?
So I always say, like, if you imagine like trying to tell your uncle or your grandfather that one of their ideas about something like politics or a football team is wrong, it's much harder to convince them once they're older than it is when they're younger, because they have their ideas in place. They have habits. Like, a lot of behavior is about habits. It's about how many times have you done this, how many times have you told that story to yourself, and that's the habit that's ingrained, and it becomes physiological. I think that with a I always say you can probably convince your dad to change an idea about his politics or something, but you'd have to make a really compelling case. That's what I always say. So the idea there is, like, it's possible. Of course, you've got more stuff to go through because you're going through learned behavior and habit. But if you already think that it's impossible, you've lost before you've even started. So I would say that you have to make a really compelling case. So if the dog's a little bit older, you need to really go for it. You need to be like, okay, so for example, if your dog's always slept on the upstairs or something like that, or if your dog's got problems with its legs and now it can't climb stairs anymore and you have to teach it for its own good, then you've really got to go, you've got to go all in, and the dog's going to resist, and it's going to be like, no, I want to come upstairs, and I'm going to bark and I'm going to howl, and you're going to be like, look, mate, this is for your own good. So I would say, obviously, it's harder the older the dog gets, but it certainly doesn't make it impossible. And it's you really just, I mean, some young dogs are really stubborn. Try and
Absolutely.
train like a chow chow or something like that sometimes when they're really young. They're just like, I'm not going to do it. Or you try and train I work with a lot of big shepherding dogs, Anatolian shepherds, Caucasian shepherds, Greek shepherds, big dogs. And they're not pets. They're bred to like sit around in fields all day looking tough and very cool. And you try and get them to do pet stuff, and they're like, nah, thanks. I'm not going to do that. So, dogs are idiosyncratic. They're individuals like we are. So you might find an old dog that's really easy to train, and you might find a young dog that isn't. But generally, age does matter, but it doesn't matter. It's not everything.
Okay, here's one for you with you just having the app. This is from Smacks. Do training apps actually work? This is right up
Well, listen.
your alley.
It's like, but it's like saying having a personal trainer or watching it on YouTube. First of all, you've got to, okay, number one, there's so much material out there. It's a paradox. There's so much choice out there. It's like, even just imagine if you want to start working out and there's like 50,000 people and they're all doing different things, it makes it impossible. So, you've got to first of all, work out what you want from your dog. Like, what do you want from the relationship with your dog? What do you expect? clarify that in your mind first, like really make it clear. Like, I really want my dog, I don't want it to be a robot. I don't want it to be an automaton. I want it to be a cool, friendly, happy dog that is only good and well-behaved because I'm trying to keep it safe and it's going to be polite and all these things that we want from our dog. And then you got to ask yourself, okay, how do I make that happen? And you start off with, it all starts with you.
Yeah.
An app can do, first of all, you need to find out whether the person or the organization that's made the app has got the same philosophy as you. You know, I don't want any forcing, any punishing, anything like that. I want kindness and force-free and a positive reinforcement. You've got to work out if that's working for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, you know, some people think dog training is bag of treats, clicker, sit, stay, roll over, crufts.
Yeah.
You know? And to me, it's not that at all. And the reason why I say that is because that stuff is actually really elementary and easy.
Yeah.
It's just mechanics, operant conditioning. Obviously, there are stages and some of them are much harder than others. I'm really into classical conditioning. So it's a reflexive behavior. It's building the confidence, making the dog feel comfortable, building rapport and symbiosis. So a short answer to that is apps, they can work, but you've got to get the right app. So get my app when it comes out and take it from there.
Absolutely. And just remind people what your app is called.
So the app, which isn't out yet because it's just in the process of being built. But if you go on my Positive Pet Project Instagram page, or you follow me, John Garstang, where it is on Facebook, which I'm happy for you to follow my personal Facebook if you want. If you just watch, keep an eye on that, you're going to be fairly notified when it's ready. I'm just going to ask you to just download it. I'm going to give you loads of like cool advice, and you can just reach out to me personally if you ever have any questions. So you're not going to get a better offer than that from the app front. So yeah, okay. Just drop me.
Well, in the description, I'll leave all your clickable details so everybody can get hold of you. Let's go to another question. And this one, let me see. I've done that one. Oh, here we go. This one's from Kate. How can I stop a French bulldog from chewing its paws?
Ooh. Interesting.
I don't ask the questions.
this is quite a similar one to the chasing the tail one. I mean, the chewing of the paw is, that's not necessarily a healthy thing for a dog to be doing. So
yeah.
I'm not a vet. So I would definitely say, you know, go to a vet first, because there might be something going on with the dog that needs addressing. It could be any number of things. It could be neurological. It could be frustration. It could be something actually to do physically with the paw.
Uh-huh.
There's no reason why it would be breed specific, but it sounds like it could be one of these repetitive things that animals do when they're frustrated or not feeling good. So I would get that checked out by a vet. That's something that I wouldn't want to comment on any further than that.
Yeah, and I suppose it's like humans, they find the nails for no reason. Or it could be for nerves or anxiety or...
Exactly. And if the dog has got, if is in some discomfort, it can't tell you physically. So you have to read the signals the dog gives you and go and see it. And when you go to the vet, make sure you tell them specifically what's happening and why you're asking the question.
Yeah. Okay, then. This next question, John, is from Big Vince. What's the best dog breed that doesn't molt?
Again, so these are not really kind of behavior questions. They're mostly either veterinary questions or they're questions about dog breeds. But that's fine. Like, if you spend as much time working with dogs as me, you pick up things along the way.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So one of the reasons why are the doodles. So the doodles, as we call them, the labradoodles, the cockapoos, the schnoodles, the groodles, what they are basically, if you think about dog breeds, it's genetic engineering. It's thousands and then hundreds of years of mixing things together to get the desired effect. And one of the amazing things about poodles, poodles misunderstood because of the way that they used to be trimmed back in the 80s and stuff. You remember how those crazy French poodles used to look? And people used to think, oh, they're just ridiculous dogs. No, they were incredible dogs with ridiculous haircuts.
Yeah.
you know, it's like footballers in the 80s, they had mullets, but they were still good footballers, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it's or new romantics. So if you think of it like that, so poodles are amazing because they are one of those dogs that you can have if you have allergies because they don't shed. So some people, because poodles are like super, super smart, they're amazing dogs. They're one of the most spectacular breeds, I think, especially the big standard poodles. Mm-hmm. People thought, okay, I want the poodle, but I don't want the high maintenance nuss of a poodle. So they started mixing them with golden retrievers, golden doodles, mm-hmm. Labradoodles, cocker spaniels, cocker poos. So what they wanted is a less high maintenance poodle, but with the same ability to not shed and to be good if you didn't want hair all over your house or if you don't want to sneeze or whatever. So any of the doodles, but I mean, if you really want to get a proper dog that you can really work with and, you know, get a standard poodle, they're just amazing. You never see them anymore. They're fantastic. But any of the doodles are great. Labradoodles, the golden doodles, they're big, floppy, funny animals. And you're going to have a lot of fun with them. But yeah, that's what I'd go for.
Good, good. And I don't know how to pronounce his name. Bull Spotition, whatever that means. He wants to know what your favourite dog is. What your favourite breed of dog is.
Well, I've been really lucky because I used to live in a very wealthy part of London where, you know, I got to see all these incredible breeds which you would never normally see, like these Hungarian Vizslas and all these obscure Italian breeds and all different types of Mastiffs. I mean, I'm a big dog fan. I love the big ones. Uh-huh. But what I really love, I like big dogs that behave like small dogs and small dogs that behave like big dogs.
Yeah.
I love the big shepherding dogs, Greek Shepherds, Anatolian Shepherds. They're not great pets. But my dog, Winnie, who is my love of my life, she's a cross between a Rottweiler and a Staffordshire Bull Terrier. And a lot of people would wince when they hear that.
Mm.
If you get the good bits of the softness of the intelligence of the Rottweiler and the silliness of a Staffy and you bring them up beautifully, then any of those kind of, you know, Staffy crosses, you know, they're fantastic dogs. But I've also, because I've worked in so many shelters, I've met the most mongrelly of mongrels, and they're amazing as well, because you never quite know where you're going to get. So do you know what I mean? It's like, it depends on my mood, but they're all great.
Okay, and talking on that, this one's from Will, and are some breeds friendlier than others?
I don't know if you look at it from that perspective, I would say some dogs are closer to working breed. So like you've got to see how often that they've been bred since they were actually really working. So if you're thinking about things like Collies, Jack Russells, you know, Malinois, these dogs are working dogs and they want to work. They want to be doing stuff. They don't want to sit around on the couch all day. So people might misinterpret their behavior as being unfriendly, but in fact, they don't want to just lie around and be fussed and fed. They want to be doing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I think that to a large degree, dogs can be a mirror to us. So if we're friendly people and we give that dog friendly signals from day one, that we want to interact and love it from a friendly perspective, we're going to get a friendly dog. I mean, from my experience, dogs like Labradors, you know, the archetypal kind of British dog, you know, they're always friendly. They'll do anything for food. They're very loving. Mm-hmm. And you do get a lot of dogs that are quite aloof. They can stick their nose up at you. Akitas can be like Japanese Akitas, even Huskies. So I think it depends on the idiosyncrasy, on the individual character of the dog. Like you can say like Australians like sport, Greek people like smoking fangs, English people like getting sunburned and, you know. And what we do then is we make generalizations to help us make sense of the world. But in reality, there are individuals in every breed. So I wouldn't concentrate too much on the breed, but there are definitely some breeds that if you want a friendly dog, you should avoid, I'd say.
Yeah, this is a question for me, actually, because as you know, I don't know a lot about dogs. But is that saying true that there is a runt of a pack? Is it called a runt of the pack or something?
Yeah, This isn't just with dogs. This is with many animals, and it's you know, because it's access to resources. It's like when they're born, they need resources. They need the milk, or they need to get whatever they can. And you know, nature can be very, very cruel. And yeah. So because we're involved in the process, because dogs are genetically engineered by us, then it's our responsibility to see that if there is a run, then we make sure that it gets enough access. But often, like, it's a bit like the smallest kid in the family. Often they can be the ones that rise the highest because they've had to work harder. Yeah. So you definitely do get, of course, you get runts of the litter. You get runts in all animals, really. But I would say, as long as you manage that correctly, then it shouldn't make any difference on how the dog develops.
Right. Okay. And here's one, actually. This is from DZ. Are some dogs gay? I'm only asking the questions, that's all.
Do you know what? I think because they haven't got these social issues that we have. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you imagine if we just did away with all the social problems and we could just like fancy whoever we wanted, it would probably be, we'd probably behave a lot differently to how we behave with all the social stuff behind us. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah,
you
definitely. Say,
so I think that it's one of the things we can learn from animals is that they're much more liberal than us in many different ways. Because there's no stigma, imagine if a dog was gay, there wouldn't be any stigma attached to it.
Of course, there'd be no gossiping behind their back, would there? Yeah, like humans exactly. do.
Exactly. So, I mean, if I want to be really flippant, I can just say, well, who cares?
Well, exactly.
But I don't know. I've seen like such deep love. You know, if does being the gay thing, would it have to manifest itself sexually, or does it matter if it manifests itself in deep love?
Yeah.
If it manifests itself just in deep love, then I would say it doesn't make any difference to a dog. Some dogs are much more comfortable around their own sex. Some dogs are much more comfortable around the opposite sex, just like humans can be.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that I'm sure it probably does exist, but you know, I don't think it's particularly helpful to look at it in that way. And a lot of times when dogs are humping other dogs, people think it's sexual, but it's not most of the time. It's just a kind of a display. Often it's just a display of whatever, some domination maybe, or just like, hey, look what I can do. So people often can conflate the idea of just because a dog is humping another dog, then that's because it's gay. But I don't think that's accurate. So I've never had a deep and meaningful conversation with a dog about sexuality, but I think one of the wonderful things about we can learn about dogs is it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Like I said, does it matter?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Here's a little fun one. This is from Scarlett. What's your favourite really sad dog movie?
Do you know what? I can't tell you because I can't watch them.
Really?
No, I avoid them because I don't want to put myself through that. It's funny because my girlfriend's always saying, why do you... I love a good horror film, me.
Me too.
I love it. And I think that horror films are made often by the most interesting types of filmmaker, you know, the really nerdy people who love the genre. Mm. And they're just like, why do you put yourself through that? And I'm like, well, it's part of the experience. And I think that I'm a bit of a wuss when it comes to, I've never watched Marley and Me. I've just never watched it because I know it would be hard for me to watch. But it's kind of ironic in a way because I spend a lot of my life in animal shelters where there's real sadness and death and horrible stuff going on all the time. But I think, you know, I get sad even when I watch Dumbo and they give up Dumbo. And the elephants gang up against the mother, and you know, I get sad watching that. So I'd rather watch a good slasher or
absolutely. I'm with you all the way. I love a good horror movie.
I see enough sadness with dogs in real life, and I used to watch The Littlest Hobo when I was a kid. That's how old I am. So anything like that when the dog leaves, and you know, it does choke me up a bit. So
I don't know that one, The Littlest Hobo, but I do remember Lassie for some reason.
And that was a classic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a classic. And what is your top 10 tips for training a dog?
Well, first of all, I want to make it really clear that I'm interested in the relationship between the person and the dog. It's not about the dog per se.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things I'm going to say would apply to any relationship. So the most important thing is draw up boundaries. So clear boundaries where the dog knows what's going on in its life. You know, I don't want you begging at the table. Make sure you go and pee outside or whatever. So boundaries is really important. Work out the things that your dog does that you love and you want to see more of.
Uh-huh.
Work out the things that your dog does that are inappropriate or you want to see less of, you know, barking at strangers or scratching at the door, whatever it can be. Make sure that your dog has always got enough clean water. Make sure that your dog has got enough mental stimulation. So make sure it's always got things to occupy its mind.
Mm-hmm.
Always make sure that it's got enough physical stimulation. So it's got enough, you know, walks and runs and plays and things like that. Keep a very close eye on your dog's physiology and body language to make sure that it's giving you signals to see if it's always okay,
mm-hmm.
or if it's stressed. And if not, ask yourself why. Try and encourage your dog to at least be comfortable around people, from a young age, get it used to maybe being handled gently. Some dogs, again, like us, they're not massively fond of being around groups of people. Some dogs don't even really like hanging around with other dogs. And that's, again, it's idiosyncratic. It's specific to the dog. So respect your dog's individuality. I know this sounds strange, but remember they're different and they all different. And, you know, if you're like my kids, like my girlfriend, he's not that sociable. Like she's not that sociable. I'm like super sociable.
Yeah.
And I can't expect everyone to be like me.
Yeah.
And you can't expect your dog to be like every other dog. You know, embrace its individuality and try and make sure it's always felt comfortable don't worry if it's not like all the other dogs. You know, it's just that some dogs are just built like that, and that's absolutely fine.
Mm.
You know, try and just make sure that your dog has a good diet. Make sure it gets enough sleep. And do you know what? Just enjoy the process, because there's no perfection. There's no end goal. It's a relationship. It's a process. It's a thread. Enjoy every second of it.
Mm. And what would you say is the best kind of food to sort of like feed, dry or soft?
Do you know what? I'm not going to go down this route because, you know, this is the kind of thing that I can get hung out to dry on, because, you know, it's such a niche, the dog world, and everyone's got an opinion.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
And I know what I do is I make a broth, like a bone broth, like you would do as if you were a chef, if you're going to make stews.
Mm-hmm.
I use leftover bones, or I go to the butchers, I buy bones, and then I boil it up in a pressure cooker to make a broth, like you would drink it if you were an athlete or something.
Yeah.
Use that with very good quality dry food, which is very low in carbohydrates, very high in proteins, and sometimes I'll put some rice in there. Sometimes I'll put some vegetables in there. I try and keep it as natural as I can, and keep an eye on how that makes the dog on a day-to-day basis, and just tweak it. You know, you don't have to follow the instructions on the packet all the time. Use your instinct. You know, sometimes you don't want to eat three meals a day, do you? Sometimes you just want to eat once. Sometimes you want to eat six meals a day. It depends on your mood. So think of it like that.
Mm, okay. And just remind people of where they can get in touch with you if they have any questions.
Yeah. Do you know what? Like, this has been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you having me on. And I'm always happy to answer people's questions. If I can help, I will. If I don't know the answer, I can always refer you to someone who might, because I'm not, you know, the oracle of dog stuff. I'm just good at my niche, which is rescue dogs, rehabilitation, and building rapport between people and dogs. That's my real niche. So, you know, if you have any questions around those topics, you can find me obviously by my name there, John Garstang, on Facebook. Instagram is Positive Pet Project. My website is positivepetacademy.com, and on that website there'll be opportunities if you ever want to do a consultation, if you're if you haven't got access to someone you can talk to about a dog problem, and you want to just reach out and you want to do a consultation, like an hour long, we can organize that. You can just drop me a line and we can do a Zoom call like this. I can talk about your dog and we can meet and go through things. You can get my app when it's ready, as soon as
that's
it's ready.
That's what I was waiting for.
I know, I'm really bad at this. If you sign up, you make friends with me on any of these things, you're going to see when the app is ready. I'm going to put it out there. I've got a YouTube channel as well, Positive Pet Project, with some stuff on there. I'm going to have to get off my ass and do some work on that when the app comes out. Once the app is out, once you've downloaded it, if you like what I do and you really feel like my philosophy works for you and your dog, there'll be access to the course on there. And the course is like massive. It's like 7 hours of basically everything I know. There's about 30 different dogs on there that I'm working with. And it's just me blathering away, and there's lots of info on there. So yeah. But thanks for following my progress. What I'm trying to do in Greece is create an education program to inspire the next generation of kids and animal parents. And hopefully we'll be able to move that philosophy and idea onto another country next after Greece.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. I know that I'm a lot more knowledgeable about doggy stuff now.
Brilliant. Well, it's a pleasure. It's always nice to talk to you, and I look forward to talking to you again sometime soon. And remember, as I said, if you ever fancy coming over to Rhodes,
Know what? You shouldn't have said that. I'll be moving in next week.
No worries, man. Well, look, you come here and we casa su casa. Well, I'll show you around.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for your time. Have a fantastic evening, and I will speak to you very soon.
Thanks, guys. As we say, Phil in Greece, Philakia. Bye.
Philakia.